You're listening to The Aaron Carrera Show, and now your host, Aaron Carrera.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning. It is me, your host, Aaron Carrera, and it is Thursday, February 15th, 2024, the day after Valentine's Day. My goodness gracious me. And it is 10:01 a.m. here in the city of Los Angeles, where the skies are blue, streaked with a little bit of clouds, and I'm so happy to be coming at you live, where we are going to continue our series on how to use acting and, well, acting tools, but also maybe some other hero's journey tools to improve your life. A little bit of business before we get going. So first of all, if you like what you're hearing, it is brought to you by me at onetolisten.com. That is onetolisten.com/Erin, Erin with an E, E-R-I-N. And if you were to come visit me at onetolisten.com, I would just love it. You can call me. You can chat with me. You can call me Al. No, you can call me Erin. Well, you could call me Al if you wanted to. I'm sorry. It's a musical day, apparently. It's a day where we're bursting out into song. What can I say? I feel really exuberant and full of happy energy today. So, you know, a lot of times I come here and I'm almost over the top energetically, especially ever since I quit coffee. My mind actually goes even faster. My energy's even faster. Today, I feel very grounded, but also just happy, you know. I just sort of feel like, because I'm happy a little bit today. So anyway, we've been doing a series on using these acting tools to improve our lives. And if you come visit me at onetolisten.com, we can do any number of things. So like I was saying, we can chat, we can talk on the phone. I have email-based services. I can channel recorded MP3s for you, tarot, astrology, life coaching. We can look at love, money, career, all the above. Anything you want. It's your time. And I have a little Easter egg for people who want to do a nice deep dive, a nice long session with me, either on the phone or on chat. If you were to click on the link in my bio in almost any of my social media, you could find me at OneToListenErin on Instagram, Erin at the School for Heroines on Facebook. Anyway, if you click on the link in bio, it'll bring you to my link tree and scroll midway down. You'll find get a life coaching session with me at onetolisten.com. And we don't have to do life coaching, but it's 50 minutes for $200. It's an incredible deal. And it is not available unless you know where to find it. So a few of you listeners have found that. And we've had such incredible long sessions where we can really dive deeply into a lot of what you're looking at. It's been really fun. A couple of people have found that little Easter egg, and we've done long sessions on multiple topics. We've looked at the astrology of situations. We've pulled tarot cards. We've come up with strategies for things. I love doing these deep dives. But also, if you just want to call for 5 minutes and just, you know, touch base on something, I'm here for you. Generally speaking, I'm around. So if you don't see me, you can always make an appointment or schedule a callback request. And for example, right now my parents are visiting. So if I'm not around, just give me an hour or two to get back to you. But I promise I'll get back to you as soon as possible. And we'll find a time that works for both of us. Okay, I think that's all the business for today. That's all the business. Everybody take a deep breath in. Oh, and just sing out your exhale. I don't know why I sang that. That's so funny. Or you could take another deep breath in and sing something different. Maybe after acting, we'll do a session on singing, because what's happening in your singing life is happening in your life. And I know people tell me all the time, oh, I can't sing. And I think, I don't know if that's true. I feel like, okay, sure, if you don't physically have a voice, even then, singing isn't just about being this perfect vocalist. It's about expressing beyond what normal words can do. It's like dance. You know, people can dance even if they're not mobile. There's a way that they can dance internally. Do you know what I mean? You can hear the music. That's almost how it really starts, right? The rhythm affects your heart, and suddenly your veins and all of the different tissues, the lymph tissue, the blood, the oxygen flowing through your veins just starts to respond differently. And now we've known this has been proven. We've seen the scientific studies on what happens when they play Mozart for water molecules versus other kinds of music. Well, when you start feeling that movement to dance, for me, it always starts in my second chakra. I feel that creative stir and my hips want to start going. Singing is different but similar. You don't, no one wants you to, there's only one Barbra Streisand, there's only one Linda Ronstadt, there's only one Freddie Mercury, and there's only one you. So you should just be you. You know what I'm saying? So, everybody. We've been talking about these acting tools and how to use them for our lives. And if you want to come chat with us over on Facebook or chat with us in general during a live show, it's on Facebook. If you go to onetoradio.com, you click on chat with us on Facebook, it brings you to our OneTwo Radio group. You'll see, if you're listening live, you'll see my banner posted at the top of the page, and in the comment section is where we're chatting. And if you want to know how to apply these tools to your life, to a specific situation you've got going on, I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear what you're wondering about, querying, quandering about, and we can talk about it because today, so previously, our tools before, to recap, our first tool was being in the body and practicing being in your body so that you're using your mind as a tool as opposed to being used by the mind and to give you more awareness. A lot of these tools sort of overlap one another, or it's almost like they become, pieces of a whole, like the little pieces of a wristwatch, right? If you think about the little gears and the little mechanisms and the little springs, a spring is a spring unto itself, but altogether, the spring without the little gears doesn't really have a function to a wristwatch. A lot of these tools, in terms of being an actor or a writer or a storyteller or a public speaker or a performer or a human in negotiations, therefore something like a business person, a salesperson, an attorney, a lot of these tools don't necessarily work independently of one another, although you can work on them one at a time. So our first tool was being in the body. The second tool was your environment, which we included a little bit of time management as well. Our next tool that we're going to be talking about today is probably a tool that we could use an entire series on, and that is listening. Listening. I mean, for goodness sake, I work at a website called onetolisten.com. I am by my initial trade, not the very first work I ever got paid to do, because the first work I ever got paid to do aside from chores was babysitting. But the third job I ever had was as a musician. So, as a musician, you're listening. Listening is a skill that you can always be refining and deepening and renewing. There's a few wonderful tools that you can constantly be honing when you listen. And there's so many different ways to listen, right? Like the way that you listen to, for example, your favorite singer-songwriter, let's say you love Beyoncé or you love Taylor Swift, like the way you listen, which is going to be unique to you, is also going to be unique to whom you're listening to, right? Like the way I listen to, say, singers whose songs I know backwards and forwards, like let's say I'm listening to Madeleine Peru, if you know who she is. One of my all-time favorite performers, or if I'm listening to recordings of singers I've listened to my whole life, Nina Simone, Leonard Cohen, right, just Frank Sinatra. The way I listen to, it depends, actually. The way I listen to, say, for example, Leonard Cohen is I'm listening primarily for lyric and mood. If I'm listening to Bob Dylan, I'm listening primarily to lyric. If I'm listening to Nina Simone, I'm listening to learn. I'm not saying I'm not listening to learn to those others, but with Nina, like the musicality and the refinement of her voice and the soul of her voice. You know, if I'm listening to, say, a friend of mine made this playlist, he sent it to me. It's called, I'm gonna swear. So if you're at work, I'm about to swear. It's called, I fucking love the 90s. Because he sent it to me because we got in this conversation about that song Fade Into You by Mazzy Star and how that's the ultimate song of the 90s. Which, you know, I know is a huge, insane statement, but think about it, you may end up agreeing with us. But he made this whole playlist, and the rules for the playlist, for that particular playlist, were it had to be an artist or a band or an act that became known in the 90s. So, like, it couldn't be U2 because U2 became known in the 80s, even though they were huge in the 90s, right? Or even though, like, Sting was huge in the 90s, but he became known far earlier. So, they had to become known in the 90s. And then on this particular playlist, he wasn't putting his favorite songs of these artists, but the songs they became known, like, what was their big hits. And it's interesting because there's, to me, a disproportionate number of Alanis Morissette songs. It's not that I don't like her. It's just like, why are there so many Alanis songs? And he's like, because she had that many great hits. I'm like, there should be way more Sarah McLachlan. He's like, no, she was super important to you, just like Ani DiFranco, Paula Cole. But he's like, but he's missing, in my opinion, a few important artists, but that he's still building. Like, he's missing Rusted Root, Send Me on My Way. Remember that song? Send me on my way. Send me on my way. Send me on my way. Anyway, I love that song. I would like to hold your hand. Anyway, says the 90s kid here. I'm just saying, like he was putting in all these hits. And I know I'm diverging, but there's a reason, right? Because I listened to the first time I listened to this playlist, I couldn't just listen. I was singing along. I was fast forwarding through the songs I don't like because I'm like, I lived through this crap already. I already had to endure being cruising up and down Division Street in St. Cloud, Minnesota with my girlfriends and my little Oldsmobile on a Friday night, listening to the song I hate because it was on the radio. And they didn't want to turn the radio station to something different. So I was listening for my own consumption and, self-remembrance, as opposed to when I go to, say, the Hollywood Bowl and I listen to the LA Philharmonic and they're doing Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, which I do listen for my own consumption, but I'm also listening for a very different purpose. Now, there are parts of that symphony that I love and that I do actually focus on. For example, certain passages in the violin or certain the choral passages in the Ode to Joy. But I'm also listening just with all of my ears and all of my senses and every cell of my body open. So when you're listening, for example, like when I'm listening to a client talk to me on 1-2-Listen, I'm opening my brain to my channel, right? I'm listening with my whole being. With every cell of my body, with the back of my mind as well as the front, with all of the awareness I can summon. But I'm also asking specifically for a channel to be opening up. I'm asking for the channel to come through. Like before I take a call, I pray and I ask to be of service to a client, to a person calling, to one of my peeps. They're all my people. It's weird to call clients and they're my people to be of service, and I'm asking for that channel to open up, right? But then the way I listen to someone who's calling me on 1-2-Listen for my services as a psychic, right? Or an astrologer or a tarot reader, whatever their life coach, whatever, or blending of all of those services. It's very different than how I listen to my husband. And there's about 50 different ways I listen to my husband, right? Well, let's be honest, there's infinite ways I listen to him. Sometimes he's actually asking for me to help him the way I might help someone who's calling me and want to listen. Sometimes he just wants me to just listen to him talk about soccer for hours on end. Right? He just wants me to talk, listen and not offer my opinion on soccer, which would be silly anyway. I have no opinion on soccer. I really have no opinion on soccer. Or sometimes he wants, you know, just to unload. And that happens sometimes I want to listen too, but that's also going to be different than how I listen to my sister. If my sister calls and she has, and we're just chatting, she's telling me what's going on. I'm just listening, right? I'm just hanging in there. But if she's got a problem, she and I have developed a system where we say, okay, I'm asking for your advice on this, or I just need someone to listen so that neither of us is offering unsolicited advice. And all of this is different than how I listen to say, when the unhoused person who's still in my garage periodically is talking to me, usually he's catching me as I'm on the fly and I'm trying to run, and I'm not taking my time to listen, right? I'm taking my time to listen for specific information and respond and quickly get out of there because I'm usually on my way out. I usually run into him when I'm literally leaving my home, right? Driving off somewhere. So listening is a deep, deep conversation. Now, as an actor, it's actually one of the most important skills there is. Because if you're not listening and you're just waiting to say your line, you're not really participating in the scene. You're not really being. Not really. It's true. People get in conversations where they're not listening all the time in real life, right? In real life, people get into conversations where they're just waiting to say their turn. Right, where they're just waiting to say what they want to say next, or they're coming up with what their argument's going to be rather than truly listening and taking things in. That happens all the time. It is not masterful, but it's normal human behavior. But if we're using a tool to improve our lives, you know, I have a girlfriend who is a doctor, but before she was a doctor, she was an actor, a very excellent actor, an incredibly well-trained actor. She went to one of the top drama schools in the country. She studied with all the top acting teachers here in Hollywood. She acted in a couple movies. And then she decided she didn't want to do that anymore. And she went and became a doctor. And when she would go do her rounds, when she got to that point in her career, she had one of the better, and I would say, because she's not a braggart, she probably had the best bedside manner of her entire class. I can't say that I wasn't there, but I bet she was because she was an actor. She had been trained to listen. To listen deeply, to listen to what the other person is saying, but also to watch their body language, to listen to the inflections of their voice, to listen inside the reverberations of the speech. Now, I'm not saying we talk about that in acting class per se, but just having been a musician, an actor, a psychic, a one-to-listen person for so long, you know, you really learn to listen deeply. You really learn to tune your ears in, not only to what's being said, but to what's being unsaid but intended, to subtext, which we'll get to later, to where somebody's got a strain in their voice, to where somebody's laughing too much or has too much energy or not enough energy, to where they pause. You know, there was an incredible article in, I think, yesterday's Washington Post, I think it was. I subscribe to a bunch of different, John McWhorter. I don't know if he's New York Times or if he's Washington Post, so forgive me. But John McWhorter, he does a column about language, and he did a column about the use of the word like in modern English. The word like, as well as a few other little phrases such as you know, kind of, and sort of. These are little phrases and words we insert for various reasons that have become completely acceptable in modern usage, even though they're filler, they're not necessary. But because language evolves and is not prescriptive, right? It's evolutionary. Even though there are rules of language, we have come to a place in modern normal parlance, just normal everyday speech, where we are used to people saying, like, you know, so if you wanted to like get a hold of something and you really wanted to understand like exactly the rules, you know what I'm saying, like of the rules of what's going on in the company and exactly how to respond, what you would do is like you would go to your rule book here and like, you know, you just kind of take a look, see how many fillers I put in there. There was like half filler. I just did it. There was like half filler. That was probably half filler. We're used to that. It's not necessary, and it is no longer, in fact, a sign of low intelligence. It's interesting because John McWhorter's column yesterday was one where he began saying, I recently listened to some tapes of some of my relatives in the 60s speaking to therapists. And there are so many pauses in their sentences. There are a lot of pauses, and he began to analyze when there were pauses. Now, these were folks who weren't using filler words such as like, you know, sort of, kind of. They weren't using filler. Instead, they were actually pausing. And he began to analyze that they were pausing for a variety of reasons, including number one, of course, to think about what they're going to say next. Number two, to catch the word that's floating out there, they're not quite grabbing, right? Like we all like, or in this case, I'm using like in an appropriate manner. Well, many of us do this, right? We're using like, or, you know, to get to that next, to get the bridge between one thought to the next. But he said often they were also using the word like, or sort of, or kind of, to actually underplay something that was a little bit hot. Right? To downplay the energy, to be more polite, to be deferential to the subject matter as a way to, I was about to say sort of, right? As a way to protect or soften what was being said. Now, in Romance languages, you know, I speak Italian. I do speak a little French and Spanish. I understand it anyway. I speak a little. But Romance languages, if any of you speak any of them, you know that they have different tenses. And they have different tenses. For example, the subjunctive tense, or in Italian, we would call it the congiuntivo. In French, it's sujonctif, right? They have these different tenses that are meant to be polite, that are meant to soften what's being said, to not be so overt. So instead of saying, I want an ice cream, you are more likely to say, I would like an ice cream. It's more polite. Now, it's not necessarily that Italians or French or Spanish or people in South America are more polite than Americans. Americans have our own mechanisms to do this, or American English speakers. I'm not sure about Australian or British English speakers, although I presume there's similarities in the evolution of those aspect, those versions of English as well. Why am I taking my time to talk about all of this, right? It's because the more deeply we listen, the more deeply we understand what's happening in what other people are saying, and including the more deeply we talk about ourselves, or I'm sorry, the more deeply we listen to what we are saying ourselves, the more deeply we have a better understanding of the reality of a situation, the more deeply we can understand where someone else is coming from or what they intend, or we might feel more free to ask better questions, right? How often are we actually operating under assumptions that aren't as accurate as they could be? Because we either didn't listen very well, we couldn't hear very well, or because we sort of listened a little and didn't listen as thoroughly as we could have, and then all of a sudden a misunderstanding occurs, right? There's a lot of different aspects to listening. But there's a couple other things I want to say in my preface to listening. Another aspect of listening that I think deserves mention right away is why it's hard to listen. Why is it hard for us to listen, to really hear what another person is saying? Of course, a lot of times we don't even know what we really are saying, or we don't know everything we're saying, or we're saying one thing, but there are 11 other meanings within what we're saying. Have you ever had that happen where you're saying one thing to your partner, but you actually, for example, your partner's interrupting you in the middle of something, and you have a conversation that you end with, okay, honey, love you. And what you mean by that, okay, honey, love you, is I'm done with this conversation and I want you to know that I care about you, but I need to get back to what I'm doing. Okay, honey, love you. Right? Like, I mean, maybe that's just an Aaron thing. Because it's very hard if I'm in the middle of something important to me to be interrupted with my special important time to talk about soccer or whatever it is. It's not always soccer, it's just very often soccer in my life. Right? Versus, okay, honey, I love you. Do we? I don't mean to rush you out of talking about soccer, but I am in the middle of working on this project. Could we talk about soccer at dinner? All right. I love you. It's a slightly different variation on that theme, right? Versus, when there are times of my life where my husband might be gone for, say, a month, 2 months in another country, and I don't get to talk to him every day. And the last trip he took, I remember once there, I mean, we talk every day, we Marco Polo or message every day or text every day, but I didn't hear his voice for like 3 days. Or I didn't get to actually talk to him like in an actual conversation for 3 days. And then all of a sudden, we both had a time where we could just talk as a romantic couple and not about work and not about family and not about responsibilities and not about planning and not about logistics and not about money and not about, cleaning the house and not about the plumber coming and not about what was going on there. Just talking about, hey, so how are you? I love you. Right? That's a very different I love you. Right? Now I'm bleeding into other topics of acting, but when we talk about listening, it's important to think about our own skills as listeners because that's the only thing we can really work on, right? But do you ever notice you're talking to somebody or you're listening to somebody? By talking, I mean in conversation. You're listening to somebody. Maybe you're listening to me on the radio. Maybe you're listening to one of our other one, two radio hosts. Maybe you're listening to somebody at work. Maybe you're listening to your boss, or your kid, whatever it is. And all of a sudden you're just triggered. You know what I mean, right? You go into resistance. Suddenly you're planning what your response is going to be, or you can't wait for them to stop talking and you're thinking, shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up. Let me talk, let me talk, let me talk. Go away, go away. Whatever it is, you're triggered. Why do we get triggered? This is one of the most wonderful values of listening because it clues us into our triggers, and triggers are beautiful, wonderful things. They are if we work on them. Why? Because they show us where our ego is getting involved, where we think the world is supposed to be a certain way, but the world is showing us that the world is not that way. And it is giving us that gift in the form of a person talking to us and saying something we don't like. Now, it doesn't mean that that person is right. It doesn't mean there's only one way the world is, but it's showing us a consciousness that was pre-existing because the trigger does not exist without that consciousness preempting it. You wouldn't be triggered if you didn't have a consciousness preempting it, right? Like my whole life. Okay, so for example, something some people think is wrong. I'm trying to think of something that like I never had judgment about, but others did. There's so many things, and they're all kind of controversial. So for example, whatever gender you are, I've never ever had an issue with anybody being whatever gender they wanted to be or felt they were or truly understood themselves as. I just never did. I remember when I used to do massage when I was very young, when I was 19 years old, and I worked at this place in suburban Minneapolis. I actually had a number of transgender, we had a different name then, but transgender clients, they just referred each other to me. I don't know. The first one came in and asked if it was okay. And I was like, of course, why wouldn't it be? I just never had judgment about it. It never bothered me, worried me. It was always, I happen to not necessarily believe in strict genders. I happen to always have had a sort of fluidity myself to this idea that there's just many different expressions of humanity, and they're all themselves. Like you are you, I am me. Who I am is kind of fluid. I've always been kind of fluid as a person, right? So I just have never had any issues with that. I've never had a trigger with that. So it's always interesting to me when I hear other people who do have a trigger with that because I think there's a consciousness that you've been indoctrinated with that I somehow never got. I somehow never was indoctrinated with a consciousness around gender. Now, certainly, I was raised with specific gender norms in certain kinds of ways because of where I was born and the community I was born to, you know? So I can't say that I have no consciousness around gender because I do. I was born to a second wave feminist, but I was also born to people-pleasing Minnesotans. So I was born with this indoctrination and training that is at war with itself somewhat, at conflict with itself somewhat, right? And I'm sure I'm not alone in that. I'm sure most people I grew up with, certainly most women, I'll use that term, probably have us, and many men. I guess I have a lot of guy friends that were trained to be people pleasers, and it's not really gendered, even though sometimes when it is gendered, it falls into other categories of social exploration, right? Second wave feminism, for example. So it's just so interesting because the consciousness that gets triggered in me, right, when I get triggered, there are certain consciousnesses I just lack. So I could never be triggered about, for example, somebody being transgendered and wanting a massage for me, right? Like, so who cares, right? Like, you're just a human person. We all have bodies, and bodies get massages. If you do massage therapy, you massage bodies, right? Like, you don't really. I'm sure there are massage therapists in this world who think radically differently from me. Like, I have never judged a body I'm massaging. I promise you, I've never judged a body for being the size it was, the level of hairiness that it was, the level of acne that was there. Although sometimes, yes, acne in certain areas, if it's bleeding, makes it not possible to massage, but that's a different issue. That's not judging. That's just simply like, I can't massage open wounds. You know what I'm saying? If you didn't know what I was saying, massage therapy, you're not supposed to, it's an OSHA hazard to massage an open wound. Don't do that, right? It's a way to, spread disease. It's actually contraindicated. I'm just saying, like, but I personally have never judged bodies, I've never judged. Also, it's interesting because I've also never judged when I'm massaging them. I've never like thought, oh, what a beautiful body. I've always found all bodies kind of amazing. Also, a lot of that probably has the lot to do with the way I massaged. I massaged by listening. I would close my eyes. When I used to do massage therapy, and I did it for 25 years, 26 years. From the time I was, almost 19 years old, 18, about to turn 19, I closed my eyes to massage. Like, aside from needing to know where there were wounds or whatever, I just closed my eyes for a lot of the massage. And I was just slow dancing and engaging that way. And I was listening to the body, but I was listening not with my ears per se, but with my whole being and with my hands and with my thumbs and sometimes with my elbows even, So sometimes with my knees. So I recognize that I have a very different experience than a lot of people in the world, for sure. But it was a real gift to me, I suppose, because I learned to listen in different ways and different levels. Now I've really gone on and on about the triggers. But I wanted to give the example of something a lot of people get triggered about that I never did. I just didn't because I didn't have that consciousness. So that when you are listening to somebody and you hear something that triggers you, like maybe any number of the things I've just said, one way or the other, right? About being a people pleaser or about second wave feminism or about massaging with my eyes closed or about not judging people's bodies or about acne. I don't know. All kinds of things might trigger anybody at any moment. But that trigger belongs to you. Yes, it's great to be mindful of what we're saying or to learn why we should be thoughtful about the words we're saying. But ultimately, this trigger still belongs to the person who's triggered. And every person is going to have their own set of triggers based on their own history and their own learning and their own consciousness. So that when you are triggered, it is amazing to be able to say, oh my gosh, look at this. I'm triggered. What consciousness is preceding this trigger, and do I agree with it or not? Right? We've talked about it a little bit on the Erin Carrera show before, the stop, drop, and roll on your thinking. When you get triggered, sometimes it's a sign that's intending to help you, right? Sometimes it's a sign that you need to have a boundary in place that you maybe don't have, or that you perhaps are in a dangerous space. Sometimes the trigger is not about a present danger, but about a historic danger. It's about a trauma. And then that trigger can be useful in helping you uncover something that deserves to be healed so that you can improve an existing current right now situation. Or something that you can understand, oh, okay, so when my partner is saying something about my body, this is not the same as when I was little and I was teased about my body. They're not, I can speak to my partner and ask them not to talk about this part of my body, and certainly not in these ways. But also, this is my trigger, right? Now, I've got a lot of trauma about my body, and I have, for better and for worse, trained my partner to never say anything, right? Never says anything. Every once in a while, he'll just say, "You look very beautiful," right? But he never says anything about my body, one way or the other. And that is because my mind will twist it, and it's just better for him. Probably not better for our relationship and not better for me, but better for him to just not say anything, one way or the other. And so he doesn't. And the same goes with my entire family. We're all very, very mindful and probably too mindful about not saying anything about anybody's body other than you look beautiful. That's it. And that is because, I have a lot, long history of trauma, and people are being mindful of the idea that if you say something that could be triggering, it could inadvertently cause harm to someone. Well, the trigger still belongs to me, right? Still my trigger. But it's taken years for me to get to the place where some of these things are, I'm available to hear without taking in. I still think people should never say things like, or I think it's a very area where we should be mindful because we live in at least in America, in a culture that is super fucked up around food and body image and body and what's appropriate and what's appropriate food and what's appropriate to eat and what's appropriate not to eat and what's an appropriate body size or and if you should and dieting is morally it's like it's actually a moral we are mandated morally to be eating a certain way at this point in our country, whether or not that's true for us individually. And I mean, we're just really it's a big mess right now. So I'm like I think it's a very, very hot topic that deserves another series, right? But I'm just using it as an easy discussion around the idea of being triggered. A lot of times when we get triggered, it makes it very hard to continue to listen. But what if you could say, oh, I see that trigger. I'm going to note it for my own work on my own consciousness later or right now if I have the time. Depending on the person you're speaking with and what kind of time you've got, right? But I'm going to continue to actually listen. I'm just going to listen. I'm going to set my ego aside, right? This is why we meditate. This is why we do body scans to get in touch with ourselves so that we can have enough mastery to say, now is not the time for me to succumb to a trigger. Now is the time for me to set that aside and remember it to look at later to continue to listen. There's this wonderful poem, Why I Take My Time. Every moment is so precious because we never know what someone's next steps will be and whether we'll get another chance to listen to them again. This is why I take my time with patience. It can be a while before they tell me how they really feel, but the connection you make is immeasurable. And I believe that this can help people heal. This is why, this is by a poet named Ravenna Raven at Johns Hopkins Sibley Memorial Hospital, February 2020. I was just Googling poems about listening because I wanted to share some and I couldn't think of any of my own personal favorite poems specifically about listening, even though there's many, many, many. There's many, many. And in a way, listening to a poem requires a different way of listening, doesn't it? But I found that one and I thought, oh, that's beautiful. Every moment is so precious. I'm going to rephrase it just a little bit for the sake of it doesn't have to be about a patient. Every moment is so precious because we never know what someone's next steps will be and whether we'll get another chance to listen to them again. This is why I take my time with people. It might be a while before they tell me how they really feel, or what they really think, or where they're really coming from, or what they really want, or who they really are, or how much they really love you, how much they really love me, what you mean to them, what I mean to you. But the connection you make is immeasurable, and I believe that this can help people heal. And I'm adding to it, I believe this can help people love. I believe this can help people understand. I believe this can help people solve. I believe this can help people love and care and laugh and joy and share joy and wonder and solve problems and overcome obstacles and maybe even create peace or inroads to peace, maybe. I know it's really hard to listen to people who are offensively different than you, right? Certainly I have them. Sometimes I have listened to or read things from people I would judge as immorally and insanely evil. And I'm not talking about, like an opposing football team. I mean, I'm talking about like dictators and fascists and things like that. Or here's a weird example. Like I once read Ted Kaczynski's manifesto, the Unabomber. I was doing research for a project and I was reading manifestos. And I read his manifesto. And he's brilliant until the point at which he starts talking about how it's justified to kill people to get your point across. I mean, all of a sudden, it just took this turn for the diabolical. It was just evil. And I could hear it. And I'm sure that man is way more brilliant than I am. He couldn't hear that. I'm sure that he would still, if he were alive, explain why he was right, why there were instances in which he was right. It's hard to listen to that. And I'm not listening to agree. I was reading and listening to understand why or how an insane mind works. And I was doing it specifically, actually, so that I could replicate it in a project I was writing. And I don't know that I'm better for it. I probably am not. But I am more aware of this kind of insanity that exists in humanity, and therefore I am very interested on a peace and justice level in coming up with programs and ways to I don't know that we I don't know about ameliorate that, that's the wrong word, but to offer the possibility of rehabilitation. And if that's not possible, then to offer the possibility of awareness and monitoring, right? Like when you have psychotic people in a society who don't understand morality and why that's better for the society in which they exist, right? Then we need to monitor. That's my opinion. Did you get triggered, psychotics who are out there listening? I'm just kidding. I don't think there's any psychotics listening. There might be. So that's a huge introduction, and we're all already 45 minutes in because I wanted to talk about listening. Listening. Oh my God, how much it does for us, right? Major impacts on our job, on our effectiveness in any negotiation we ever have to enter, whether we want to or not, right? You're at some point in your life most likely going to negotiate something. Buying a car or a home, getting your kids to eat vegetables, But listening greatly impacts the quality of your relationships with other people. And there's, like I said, there's so many different ways and reasons that we listen, right? Sometimes we're just listening to get information, right? Like if you're ever in a foreign country, for example, when I'm in Italy and I'm asking, like I went to a spa when I was in Italy, and the woman who was, I was getting a Turkish scrub and a massage, and the woman who was explaining things to me went by so quick, I kind of missed what I was supposed to do regarding underwear. It's kind of an important thing to know because I didn't want to be offending somebody in another country by free, you know, going commando if I wasn't supposed to, you know, or if there's legal in some places, there are legal reasons you can't go commando. I'm from, you know, I come from the world of Esalon where it's a totally different vibe, right? But anyway, so I was listening to get the information, but I had to ask her again, you know, mi dispiace, però forse non ho sentito bene. I apologize, but maybe I didn't hear very well. What do I need to do with my underwear? Le mutande. Cosa devo fare? Right? My underwear. What do I need to do? And she laughed. And she showed me a piece of paper underwear to put on. It's like, paper underwear. Okay. You got it. I could just wear my underwear, but paper underwear it is. Alrighty. Right? So I was listening for information. I was listening to understand also. We listen to understand. Sometimes we listen for enjoyment. Like we were talking about music. We listen for fun. We listen to learn. We listen to get tips. Aaron, give me tips on how to listen better. Give me tips on how to use listening to improve my relationships. Give me tips to listen better so that I can get my kids to do what I want them to do. How do I listen to my kids better to get them to do their homework? Right? How do I do that? We'll get there. This might spill over into next week's episode. I'm sure it will. Okay? Part of it is listening. Here's a tip on if you're trying to listen to your kids so that you can get them to do their homework. Because they're saying, Mom, when am I ever going to need algebra in the real life? And you're going to say, when you invest in crypto. Because interest, compounding interest is an algebraic equation. And if you want to have money in this life, well, I mean, that's one way you could do it if they care about money. If they don't, then there's other conversations we can have. You can say, you will actually use it later in your life without realizing it. But the main thing is, whatever you want to do in life will be greatly aided by understanding that every once in a while, you're going to have to do some crap you don't want to do, like filing your taxes. And if you don't want to file your taxes, you're going to have enough money to pay someone to do your taxes. And if you're going to have enough money to pay someone else to do them for you, you're going to want to know the basics about your money so that somebody isn't stealing from you, you know, so that you're not looking at your statements like, wait a minute, I know enough about math to know that something isn't right here. There should be way more money in this account. Who is stealing from me, right? These are like the basics. This is just one basics. Of course, it's going to be, I'm giving like the basic why you should learn algebra, right? It's going to be dependent upon your kid. And the more deeply you listen to that particular kid and where that particular kid is coming from, the better you can speak. Yes, in a way, manipulate them, but speak to their desires and what they want in life and where they're coming from. And the more they feel heard, the more they might be willing to partner with you on doing this thing they don't want to do, like eat broccoli or do algebra or take up a sport or come up with a way around that with you, right? Okay, I don't really want to do a competitive sport. What if we go, you know, like, I don't know about you all, but when I was a kid, my parents had rules. We each had to do one activity in addition to get good grades. We all had to get very good grades, the best possible. My parents are strict, though. We all had to get the best grades possible. And we also all had to do one athletic or sports activity and one other like art or extracurricular activity. And then we all had to do one church thing. I ended up being a super overachiever doing a lot more than all that. But in the end, I didn't do competitive sports. I talked them into letting me do workouts instead, and I just worked out on my own, right? Which was fine by them. Although in the beginning, they said, no, we want you to do some sports because we want you to learn how to play sports and learn how to get along in a team setting. Oh, God. Oh. Right? And I later got along in a team setting by doing theater. So they were like, okay, fine. Right? But when we were young, we had those kind of rules. And I noticed that my siblings employ those kind of rules with their kids too. Like, you got to do something. You got to do a sport and or you got to do an extracurricular activity. You can't do nothing. So we had to do all of that. And when I got to a certain age and I didn't want to do church stuff anymore, well, it didn't matter because my parents still wanted me to do it. And I wanted to sing. So I said, okay, I don't want to do youth group anymore, but I do want to sing. And they were like, okay, right? We were able to find solutions. So whatever your rules are for your kids, of course, it's going to be individual to the kid. Okay, so we're going to be talking about listening next week too, I can tell already. But I just want to share a few fun facts about listening that I looked up. So we listen all the time. Well, or do we, right? Given all the listening that people do on a daily basis, you would think that humans would be very, very good at listening. But in fact, most people are not good listeners. They're not. Sorry to say, they're just not. And research suggests that humans actually only remember 25 to 50% of what they hear. Now, there are a few outliers. There are people who remember everything they hear, but most people only remember 25 to 50% of what they hear. I am not a, I don't have a good memory. I do when it comes to music or, plays I've done. Or there are ways that I am, there are things I do remember, but I remember emotional details about people. I may not remember, like sometimes someone will call me on 1-2-Listen that I haven't spoken with in 2 years, and they'll say, I don't know if you remember, but I was dating this guy. And then when I hear that voice and the emotions inside the voice, I'll be like, oh yeah, the guy who bada bada ba, and I'll remember. And it's not because I'm a great rememberer with a great memory. I'm really not. It's pretty bad. But it's because there was an emotional impact that I got involved in, which is a clue to how we can help ourselves remember better. But listen, if we only remember 25 to 50% of what we hear, that means that when you're talking to your spouse or you're talking to your boss or your kids or a lover or anybody, customers, colleagues, from right? If on average, not those of us who are really specifically training ourselves to listen well, but if you're not really actively working on improving your listening skills, if you listen to someone for 10 minutes, you're only paying attention. Well, you might be paying attention, but you're only re retaining 2.5 to 5 minutes of what they've said. That's the same thing, right? When you're receiving directions, like let's say in my example of when I was in Italy. Now there was a language barrier, but part of it was because of course I got caught up when she said one part of what I needed to be paying attention to. I missed the next 2 minutes of what she was saying because I was caught up on this other thing she had been saying. Right? When you're receiving directions or you're being presented with information, you're not getting the whole message. Right? Yes, many of us have been taught to listen for the important parts or the highlights. Or if you're like me and you spent a lot of years in high school living in fantasy, but keeping one ear to the conversation so that if the teacher said, Aaron, and you had to answer a question, you could kind of do a basic version of what was happening. Oh God, terrible, right? Listening, listening, listening is a skill we could all benefit from improving. Listening. I was thinking listening. We could all benefit from improving our listens. So, of course, yes, we could talk about active listening. I like better the idea of deeply listening. Deeply listening. But sometimes it's important to start with something, thinking about where our skill set is less and working at that, right? So that you're making a conscious effort not just to hear the words that somebody's saying, but the complete message, right? This means that you have to pay attention to who you're listening to very carefully. It means not allowing yourself to become distracted by whatever else is going around on around you, by not forming your counter arguments while the other person is still talking, by not allowing yourself to get bored, by not losing focus on what they're saying. Sometimes When I was younger, one of the things I would do when I was training myself to listen very deeply is I would just remember how much I cared about the person in front of me. And this is an acting tool we'll get to again later, but I would remember how much I cared about them or why I was there. Like if I caught myself drifting, I'd be like, "Oh, this is your boyfriend. Listen." If I caught myself drifting, I'd be like, "This is your mother. Listen." If I caught myself drifting, I would say, "Really focus on the words. Focus on every word they're saying and just really pay attention just for the next 11 words." And then I would just be back in. Every time I would catch myself, I'd be like, "Oh, focus on what they're saying. Really listen," right? So if you're finding it, we're almost out of time. So we're going to continue this next week. But if you're finding it really hard to concentrate on what somebody's saying, try repeating their words mentally as they say them, right? This will reinforce what you're hearing and it will help you stay focused. Okay, we're going to get to more on listening, I think, next week, unless people tell me, no, you can move on to the next tool, which is moment before. Which isn't going to be interesting, but we're going to finish up listening next week and then move on. Okay. So, everybody, you've come to the end of another episode of the Erin Carrera Show, and I hope you enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. So, at least one of us did. I love you so much. If you want to come find me over at 1twolisten.com, I'll be available right now and parts of tomorrow and Saturday. And I would love to, I won't be available Sunday. I've got family stuff going on, but I love you. Well, I will be in the morning. So come find me, make an appointment, get a hold of me. Let's talk. I love you. Until next week. Bye-bye.